The word next is the best four-letter word in the world. Serotonin is an interpretation in your brain that you are in charge or there's no way out. Only excuses that you can have, or you can just do what's important. Because you anticipate errors, you embrace them. I take responsibility that I screwed that up. Hey guys, forgive me. I'll take the hit.
A few years ago, I was invited by a friend to do a lunch and learn for his high growth startup. We had about 25, 30 people there in the audience. It was a great session. I think the things I shared proved valuable to that group as they went forth to attack their market. Great questions during the Q&A as well. Super engaged audience. One of the questions I got was, what's your morning routine, Sri? That was towards the end of the discussion. And maybe I had just gotten tired of answering a whole bunch of questions because after an hour of talking, it can get pretty exhausting. And my response was something like, hey, my morning is mostly just getting ready, right? It's warming up. And that, I think, is something that I got from BJ Novak in an interview with Tim Ferriss. BJ Novak is the guy who is one of the writers and actors, one of the best characters on the long-running show The Office, which I don't know about you guys. I prefer Parks and Rec to The Office, but The Office is certainly a classic. Anyway, I think to some extent, morning routines can be highly overrated for a variety of reasons. Somehow there's this magical thinking that is attached to the morning that may not actually come to manifest. And people obsess over the morning, spending so much time on it and energy, just making their morning perfect when they could have just started work an hour early and gotten off an hour early or just produced more towards their mission in life and that day. At the same time, mornings do set us up for success. I've tried to reduce the amount of decisions I make in a day, especially in the morning, try and get some meditation in. One thing recently that I've started doing is taking a little bit of a leaf off of this basil plant that I have growing in the kitchen. Got some rosemary outside. I should venture outside to do the rosemary every now and then. Do the rosemary. Sounds like I'm imbibing or taking some sort of drug there. But it is this awakening experience when I take that basil between my fingers and put it near my face under my nose to really breathe that in first thing in the morning. Kind of makes me feel like I'm in nature a little bit. Obviously it's edible, so kind of awakens the palate a little bit too. And it's just one little small thing that I do in the morning amongst a larger routine that I won't bore you with now that really helps get me awake and engaged and right, so to speak. I credit Tom Shea, one of my Buds instructors, Buds' basic SEAL training. I credit him for that insight, and that's one of the many insights he shares in this interview. Was really great to reconnect with him. There's so many things that you can apply in your life, in business, and notably, with given the theme that recurs in this podcast, in leadership. Tom was one of many instructors that we had going through Buds. There's a whole slew of big personalities, guys you look up to, guys that you fear confronting every morning or evening in the middle of the night, whatever it may be. Tom was one of those guys who was very quiet most of the time, but when he spoke, everyone listened because everything he said seemingly was of some sort of great value, whether that was in terms of our physical fitness, but more often that value and that importance came from the philosophy of how Tom approaches everything. As far as I can tell, everything is very well thought out. It's not that the man cannot act under pressure and act urgently and react. Not saying that at all. But I really admire then and admire now the way that he approaches every aspect of life with a lot of intentionality, and how he relays that to all of his clients and to me as well in this interview. So without further ado, enjoy this interview with Tom Shea. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm super excited to invite to the show one of my instructors from third phase of Buds, and someone who's been a mentor to me and a ton of people. He is the host of the Unbreakable podcast, the author of Unbreakable, A Navy SEAL's Way of Life, as well as Three Simple Things, Leading During Chaos, has a thriving consulting practice since the team's where he was a highly respected operator and warfighter, among all those things. A great leader, Tom Shea. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Andy, I appreciate the time that we can spend, for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. I was hoping we could start just to give people context. What was your path to the teams?
Oh, like? My God. I'm the one path that nobody in the world should ever take. When you're a kid, it's the wrong path to take. As an adult, looking back and having talked to all the operators that were successful over time, the loser path is what gets you through SEAL training. Like, you had to have lost before. If you're a winner, if you're a national champion, if you're one of the best in the world, you go to SEAL training and then they take life away from you and you don't do well. So, I had the total loser path. Other than jail, I did everything bad to get there. But I think it's the American way of try hard, fail, try hard, hard, fail. And so my path started with going to West Point for 3 years and failing out after my third year. And then not knowing what the hell, that gray space of not knowing what's next. Really great football player, at least in my mind, I was a good football player, recruited heavily to Tennessee and other places. And then I couldn't even get into a school. I couldn't even get into a junior college. And one of my mentors at the time, who had been a Scouts and Raiders in World War II, he was one of the 12 guys to go into Iwo Jima before the invasion. And I grew up knowing this guy. And he said, now that you've hit bottom, what do you want to do? And I'm like, hey, Pat, I've always wanted to be a SEAL. And he said, sign up immediately. And I'm like, God dang, I don't know even how to swim. He goes, you'll figure out things when you're committed. Until you're committed, you're stuffed. And so I was in the middle of my last semester at Ball State University, and without dad's permission, went to the recruiting office. And there happened to be a SEAL named Pat Hennigan, who was doing recruiter duty. And I'm like, hey, I only want to be a SEAL. Is there any way to sign up for that? And he said, yeah, but man, you got to pass the test. So I'm like, what test? It was before the internet. You know what I'm saying? And so he took me out the next weekend. I tried to pass and didn't pass. And he goes, if you sign up, you're going to be in the Navy, but you better be able to pass the test. And I signed up without having the ability to pass the test. And then it was a long wait. I don't know if you remember back in then, the teams were undermanned in enlisted guys, but overmanned in officers. And I wanted to go CS, and he said, man, it's 2.5 years. I'm like, dude, you can't wait on the outside 2.5 years. I, you know, tyranny of distance, you're stuffed. So I enlisted with a 11-month window to get ready to go. And then, wow, I thought it was going to work out. So I go into Navy boot camp, trying to become a corpsman, went through those. It was called a dive fair program where everybody was SEAL, EOD, or diver. And we started out with 85 in that boot camp, and only 8 of us passed the test to get into the SEAL program. And then end up. And my first opportunity to be a SEAL was class 195. And I went to Hell Week in 195. I went to Hell Week in 196, dislocated my shoulder in 196, got to take a class off, went to 198 and then 199. So four hell weeks, and I got turned out from getting injured every freaking time. And then I made it back to class 207, and we started out with 111 and graduated 11, which is still the same numbers that happened since World War II to now. It's the same numbers. And it is a path I don't recommend anybody do, because it beats you down mentally and physically. But what it made me really deeply appreciative of was the effort that it takes to be at a top level. It's every day. You have to give up a lot of friendships to get there. You have to give up a lot of family and a lot of things that could be a lot easier to be with the top people in the world.
Absolutely. What do you miss the most? I think that the easy answer is the brotherhood for all of us. But for you, maybe besides that, what do you miss?
I don't know if I miss the brotherhood, because, you know, with rank at the end, there's no brotherhood when you're a senior and master chief. You know what I mean? You're herding cats, and the cats hate you at that point in time. It's kind of like being a commander or a captain. You're not really in the community anymore, and the brotherhood's gone. So what I and it's a hard, maybe you understand this and other operators understand it. I miss the clarity of combat. The singular clarity that happens every 2 years for about 6 months. Everything is just clean and clear. You either die or you don't die. And I miss that on the outside, because on the outside, everything is gray.
Yeah.
Nothing seems to work out well, and even if you make a lot of money, and there's still gray space, and success isn't clean, and failure isn't clean, and it's the weirdest space to compare the teams to.
Yeah, let's dive into that more, because I too miss that clarity of combat, but I don't want the audience who hasn't had the experience that we've had to kind of misunderstand, right? There's so many mm-hmm. ambiguities in combat, and even before you get to combat, in terms of mission selection and how you approach things, and depending on where you're deployed, the ability to influence the strategy as well. And so there is a lot of ambiguity, but I think a lot of guys struggle, and probably ladies among us who are veterans, to when they get out, in terms of that dealing with ambiguity. It's like if it's a, I don't know, what are the bounds of that? Like how have you overcome kind of the issues there? Because it's not just missing it. It's kind of, hey, okay, well, now that I'm here, right, that's a sunk cost. I got to deal with reality as it is and succeed in my private sector life. So how have you overcome that?
I've not been asked that question in 10 years. That's probably it's a totally an operator question, looking at a future that it doesn't know, like two operators looking at retirement going, I wonder what's going to happen in 4 years. You know what I mean? Shit. I don't know. Ambiguity is where you don't have your hand in the water. Like, imagine your hand being in a bucket of water, and you can splash it. You can go deep and affect the bottom of the bucket. You can go to the top and affect the bucket. I never felt the ambiguity in the teams. There was stuff that you could immediately impact. Like right now, the 2-meter target, once you get off the helo, on target, you are the most important and effective. You impact everything. The junior guy in the platoon is massively impactful. So there's no ambiguity once you get off the helo. It's black and white. Until that point in time, everything is less affected. Like when you're sitting on the helo, you're not flying the damn thing. So you turn, I call it turning off the power. So I'd get on a helo and fall asleep. I'm not a player right now. Target selection choices, they're not always up to you. But it's, to me, it's always, I give you 100% of my effort. If you decide not to send us in, okay. I'm the word next is the best four-letter word in the world. That's while in the teams, in combat, even in training, everything to me felt like it was black and white or next. If it's gray, I'm going to move on to the next black thing. And that was easy in the teams. On the outside, it's never clear what is the next thing. You can put thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars into marketing. It may not work. You know what I mean? You can put $1 million into sales. You may have the wrong people with the wrong training and the wrong intent, and you waste money. In the teams, it never felt like that because everybody brought, it seemed to me, everything they had, and the teams gave you back dopamine. Like, if you bring everything today, Andy, I'll give you 110% back. Like, the teams would give you back more than that you put into the effort. And in the outside, it feels like you put in 1 million steps and all of a sudden you end up in another state going, how the hell did I get here? I didn't intend to get here. And it's a very unique environment that it's always feels like it's slipping.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what
totally.
I mean?
I think where the teams gives you dopamine and serotonin for certain things, I wonder if perhaps a little bit of that ambiguity and hand out of the water, as you say, I like that metaphor, kind of playing the odds is, it gives other people, you know, that dopamine and serotonin rush, right? And whether it's, you know, an entrepreneur or salesperson, kind of, you know, hitting it big or the anticipation of that, maybe that's where, you know, they get that from, and the ambiguity is easier to deal with. I don't know.
Hey, did you ever read the study of serotonin and dopamine? Everybody knows what dopamine is. Dopamine is the feedback hormone or enzyme that without dopamine, you'll never do something 10 times. Serotonin is an interpretation in your brain that you are in charge or there's no way out. If you don't interpret that you are the duty blame human being, or if you're in charge, and if you don't interpret that I have to produce, your body won't produce serotonin. Like, if you think, hey, I'm going to leave it up to Andy to make the choices, I don't get a serotonin boost. And I don't perform at a massive higher level because of that. Without that boost, you can't perform at the, you know, the last 10% to get to 100%. And I had to go to a doctor to help me understand, because I'd heard the word serotonin 1 million times. They're like, wow, it's all interpretation. So if you feel like you're important, you'll get a serotonin boost. If you think you have one choice, you'll operate at a higher level. If you think you have 1 million choices, you'll operate at 50% of your capacity. I'm like, wow, that's a great way to look at serotonin.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I hadn't heard that particular study or conclusion yet, Tom, but it resonates, and both based on my own understanding of the two, but also just my own experience. And I think that it's hard to, even though, like, I guess hypothetically, and not a neurochemist here, I don't think Tom picked up a neurochemist degree while he was,
don't bet on what I just said.
You know, but your mileage may vary for folks listening. But I think hypothetically, you could maybe get the dopamine without the serotonin when you're not in charge. But for me, it's very muted, and it's almost impossible. It's like, they're almost orthogonal, like very, very different situations.
Yeah. Agreed.
Let's talk about Three Simple Things. So I've read the book. You've talked about it a lot. For folks who aren't as familiar with your work, break it down for us.
Probably a 2-minute discussion prior to that. in getting out the teams in 2014, I had written a series of 13 letters to my kids, and I was one of those team guys that said, you shouldn't publicize your shit. Really, that's how I looked at it. And then you get out, and the world does not embrace, they don't give a shit that you're a Navy SEAL. You got to get 8 more PhDs to get up to your peers' levels and all that stuff. And Stacy had it published without my permission. And it went out, a book called Unbreakable, that she compiled into a book called Unbreakable, got me into the public sector, kicking and biting and going, oh my God, dude. Oh. And it got me in front of teams and leaders to help them become better team management, better leaders, a program, like a methodology to get better at your life. And Three Simple Things came several years later with, there were 6 of us SEALs sitting around. Obviously, we're drinking a table down in our basement, because that's how the greatest ideas come out in the world. And a bunch of guys that we knew had committed suicide. And around the table was like, hey, in case you do it, bro, is there anything you want us to do for your family? You know what I mean? You know, SEALs would talk about that openly. You know what I mean? And it got around to me. It's like, hey, you know, if you die, what's the one thing that is kind of missing? I'm like, man, if I die, all that stuff that I've learned is gone. And they're like, hey, why don't you write another book? I'm like, the first one damn near killed me. Dude, it's so hard for me to sit and write and make any kind of linear progression out of my brain. And so Three Simple Things is a either a technology or a curriculum that I created, that I said, okay, I'm just going to spell it out, how I designed a curriculum to teach what I call a non-negotiable life. And by doing three simple things, if you can achieve simple, you win. And in a chaotic, stressful, complex environment, and you know that as a SEAL, hey, dude, I know we're getting shot at. Can you shoot that one guy over there? Can you just do that? Okay. Now, if we can process simple, we can get to a bunch of more simple things over time. And so Three Simple Things is a linear concept of how to lead yourself, your family, and your business through very difficult times by just doing simple shit every day.
I like it. Why do you think people have such a difficult time simplifying their life?
Everything seems to be important to everybody. In social media, having the right cleavage, the right body. Oh my God, he's got the better beard than me. So the comparative analysis that the human gets, because humans, unlike I think SEALs and humans, I think are the same, but I think SEALs have so many experiences that you can dive through the bullshit quick. But the normal human looks out into the space in front of them and everything seems to be important. You can't have 1,000 important things in your life because, you know, you can't do one. You can only, what I found out is you can only do 3 things really well. So that's the priority, is to do those 3. Don't do 1,000 things. There are 1,000 things to do, yes, but do these 3, or even do 1 thing and then do another thing and do another thing. It's simply because there's such a feedback loop to play in every space, you know, on the outside. Do, you know, gosh, do these, hack this system. Don't work out an hour, work out for the 5-minute hack, and have all these hustles that are side hustles compared to your primary hustle. So you got people doing 1,000,000 things and they're not doing any of them well. And imagine if you could just do 1 thing well, because the most wealthy people do 1 thing extremely well. The number one in the world in any category does that really, really well. They don't do everything well. They do 1 thing well. Like one of my close friends, a guy named Kyle Dake, 3-time world champion wrestler, he wrestles 9 hours a day. Unless you're doing that, that's one thing. Unless you're doing that, you're not going to get on the mat. And it's not the, it's, you know, like I want to be able to wrestle at the top level and I want to be able to have, you know, $1 million. It doesn't work out that way. Select something that you're willing to give your life to, like the teams, and go for it. And that makes complex things very simple.
Yeah. I can't wait to share that wrestling story with my son who has been doing jiu-jitsu for the first time for the last few months. And he's really into it, getting more mat time, but he got moved to the advanced class and is all nervous. So, you know, I'm obviously encouraging him.
He won't get hurt. He won't get hurt in the advanced class. They're the guys that have skill. You know, all the white belts fighting is where everybody gets hurt.
Exactly. So, okay. I love your approach in terms of simplicity, lots of distractions out there. I mean, we're all human, you know, even SEALs. So, I like, Andrew Huberman, was on a podcast that I listened to. I'll remember the name hopefully by the end of this episode so I can, give them a pointer, but, he has his own podcast as well, talks a lot about dopamine and serotonin. And I think his goal, he says, is to get like 20 no's a day to himself, right? 20 times where he wants to pick up his phone or, you know, whatever, look at porn or look at social media, mm-hmm. or, you know, respond to someone angrily or whatever. And so I like that. I haven't started counting them with like a wrist counter or an app or anything yet, but yeah, we're all human. So there's lots of distractions out there. Like, okay, let's say I clear up my distractions for a listener out there. Some people have difficulty figuring out what they want, right? So I think for you and me 100%. And, you know, 99% of our brothers, you know, there's the oddball who kind of just like landed in the team somehow. Or maybe their parent, you know, their dad was a mm-hmm. SEAL, but you know, we knew clearly what we wanted and went for that. But why do people have such difficulty figuring out what they want and how do they clarify that?
This is my, it's an opinion, but it's fixed. You know what I mean? As compared to, I know certain things are factual. It's not a fact. It's a fixed opinion that I've seen now for 30 plus years. Imagine that there's 5 areas of life that you have to address every day. The first area is your health. And oddly, in the teams, whether you want to or not, you're going to be a really healthy dude. Even with injuries, you're still not top 90 percentile. You know what I mean? And then you have to be a consummate learner. Like you have to be interested in learning things relative to the environment that you're in. So that's not negotiable. You can't spend a day not trying to get better at something. The third area is either business or pursue what you actually value. In the teams, our business was being a team guy, going to war, you know, leading, following, whatever that dynamic was. That was the pursuit of wealth. We got compensated somewhat financially for it, but you can't pay people to die. So you just pay me to have beer money, and that's cool. The fourth area is relationship. It's not negotiable. In the teams, sometimes we replace marriage with each other. You know what I'm saying? And then the fifth area is either spiritual or legacy. It's still the same thing. Your impact on everybody all the time and its impact on you. There's 5 areas that aren't negotiable. Those are not priorities, plural. Those are your priority and they're not negotiable every day. In the teams, you actually pursue all 5 of them. There's meaning to what you do. That's kind of spirituality. It's a weird meaning that only a team guy understands. If you're in a bad relationship at home, the team's like, okay, you got a divorce. Cool. We love you. Come on in. And we'll embrace every amount of bullshit that you bring as long as you bring everything that you are to the team. And then there's work to do 7 days a week as a team guy. You go home to recover. Recovery is a great thing to do as a team guy, but you have to recover to get better. And then whether you're liking it or not, there's shit to learn every day that ends in Y. And then your health is paramount every day of the week. And in the, what I've seen and what I try to put in three simple things is those five areas are the priority of your life. They're not negotiable. You have to address them every day. And it's not actually complex to address it. And when you stop doing all the other superfluous bullshit that you do, you spend hours on your phone, it's no, of no value to you unless it's on point. Like, hey, I'm trying to reach out to every team guy. Okay, that's on point. It's different than watching porn and, you know, watching this reel about the somebody working out, and while you're eating bonbons and drinking beer, you're watching a workout video. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's what is missing, is there actually should be non-negotiable things that you do before you do all the stuff that tends to complex things.
Hey, gang. Hope you're enjoying this episode of The Warrior Poet. If you are, don't forget to subscribe so I can get you more thoughts on leadership, interviews with military experts and business phenoms, as well as other hacks to up your game in your daily life. And please leave a review. Let me know what I'm doing well, which interviews you'd like, and if you like the philosophical musings, footnotes, or critiques of throwback music. Back to the interview.
I've heard that referred to as like five balls that you're juggling in the air. And you can't drop one. If you do drop one, you can drop it only for a little bit, but before you know it, it's, you know, I'm kind of building on the analogy, killing it, but you know, it's heavier than when you try and pick it up again, and that much harder. So, maybe we could kind of,
if you want to be in a great relationship, be healthy.
Yeah.
Like they all actually are in sync with each other. Yeah. If you're a fatty, if you're a, you know, I say it this way, not to piss people off. If you're a fat man or a fat woman, you're not in the best relationship that you could be in, because you're probably bringing your partner down or making them leave. And if you're not doing what you truly enjoy doing, at least 80% of the time at work, you're crushing your relationship at home. And if you don't think you impact other people, you're not playing in the spiritual space. You actually, like, you impacted me as a student. You know what I mean? And I impacted you, whether you liked it or not, whether I was mean to you or not. You know? And that is the legacy or impact, the connection that everybody shares. But most people don't want to own that on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Like a guy named Pat Harwood, a chief that was in first phase, impacted me. A guy named Mike Mayer was the chief in first phase. His impact on me was tremendous. Like all the instructors, had they not been there, I wouldn't have made it through. Like nobody would do Hell Week by themselves. You know what I mean? And that's the true definition of spirituality, is that it matters every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. I like I was actually going to ask you about how you thought about spirituality. Especially because I think a lot of people today have a hard time understanding what that means. They might come from different faith traditions, or, you know, no faith tradition, kind of, you know, and maybe they've moved on from one. I grew up, in a pretty strictly Irish Catholic family. My dad was Hindu, but we were brought up Catholic. You know, but I don't practice anymore. And so, you know, like there's people like me who are like, you know, what does spirituality mean? And I think, honestly, only somewhat recently has it kind of reoccurred to me, the more expansive definition of what that means. And you kind of alluded to some aspects there.
My distinction or definition of spirituality, is that, you are connected to everything across time, space, and distance. The future you can impact, the past impacts you, you, me, everybody is uniquely, connected. How you deal with that is critical. If you don't think you matter, then you don't play well in the spiritual space. If, you know, if I don't think a team guy's kids are important, I impact them negatively. Dude, you need time to go take care of your kids. If you don't, you're not a good operator. Like if your kids are falling apart, you're not operating at your top level. And so inextricably, everything is linked to it, to itself and to each other.
Yeah, I like that. By the way, you definitely impacted me and others as an instructor in amazing ways. I caught up with one or two of them leading up this interview, and they all described you as an immensely thoughtful guy. And then I remember the time we were on the island. I think I can't remember how long that ruck is supposed to be. And I think it's supposed to be like 11 miles or 12 miles. And we took a wrong turn. I think it ended up being 15. So we got some full benefit that day.
Who cares?
No, it was, I mean, the thing is, it was actually fun, in the end. So yeah,
that was the long one. We had gone down by the western shore on that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah. It was
extra. It only sucks if you want it to be over.
Exactly. I mean, we didn't know the difference, right? So you just kept going. So let's talk about breaking some of this down to brass tacks, at least by example, right? So some of the the simplifications, the get rid of distractions, and the five areas of life. I think all of those in principle are things that people are going to not disagree with. They're kind of like, yeah, Tom, like I can wrap my head around that. Like how do you manage yourself, you know, with Stacey? How do you manage your family? Like what is the daily regimen look like? Or the weekly routine, whatever you guys do. Mm.
So that's the $1 million question. I'll give you the whole Monty. Okay. So I just spent 8 hours with a client yesterday teaching the first version of, I call it level one, where it's the first pass at three simple things and three areas of life. And so how do I implement it on a day-to-day basis? It starts in the morning, right after I get out of bed, and right before I go to bed at night, it concludes. And I break it down into three things. So spiritually, it happens in the morning and happens at night. I get out of bed and I come to find out your body is the temple. You got to get your body moving. Don't get out of bed and then go straight to coffee, lethargic, pissed off, and not understanding where your body is. And I had to have a doctor teach me how to, which joints matter. Apparently every joint and every muscle matters to your body. So how do you move them in the morning? So come to find out, 5 push-ups, 5 squats, and 5 sit-ups turn on every body or every joint and every muscle. Literally, I just don't negotiate with it. I get out of bed. Sometimes I don't do it in the bedroom because Stacy's like, God damn it, dude, do that somewhere else. outside, you know, in the family room, put a mat down, do 5 push-ups. They don't have to be perfect. You can do wall push-ups, but you got to move every joint. So, 5, 5, and 5. And that's the body. The other one is you have 5 senses that are dull now because they're lethargic and you've been sleeping. So find a process to turn on your eyes, your ears, your mouth, nose, and your skin. And I just have a process to do that. Pleasant smells really make a difference in the morning. If you smell a skunk in the morning or something bitter, your whole fucking whole day is screwed. So, and it's your choice how you turn on those 5 senses. And then the first thing, the on switch is the body. The other on switch is the senses, and the other on switch is to pray, meditate, or I have a formula that I read, and I tell myself who I am and what my goal is and what I'm going to do that day and who are people that are going to help me today. And then I normally, if I'm here at the house, I wait for Stacy to get up and I have relational time. And bro, here's the most profound thing I've ever learned. And I didn't anticipate it. Three things in relationship that will transform your relationship. The most important person speaks first, which apparently is Stacy. So, and she needs a coffee to speak first. So from my brain, how I process it is I have to listen to what she's committed to doing that day, and no drama, at least during that period of time. So listen without drama and listen without judgment. If they want to do something stupid that day, all you can do is support them anyway. You know what I mean? And then speak committedly to the person, and then have some relative intimacy. The love languages are beautiful. I had to read that book too, and it took me a year to read because I'm not intelligent like you. And I need physicality in the morning, and she needs acknowledgement or an act of service. Clean the fucking dishes, bro. It makes a difference to them. Don't fight it. So those three things in relationship are profound. They're profound. And I find that clients have a difficult time with doing it. And when they do it, their business works. Literally, they're healthier. And then I, because I have a little control of my time, work out for an hour a day, stretch for 20 minutes, and drink 10 glasses of water. Those three simple things are profound in health. And there's not a day off. You can't take days off. You can't say, well, I drank too much. It's cool. You're still in the platoon, and the platoon doesn't care that you drank too much. And then work, you have to seek new work every day, or at least prepare to seek new work. You have to deal with existing projects, and you have to think what the next 5 years are going to be every single day. So offense, defense, and strategic are what I call the three simple things. And then that happens Saturday and Sunday too. And then the intellectual space, learn one new thing a day. Get better at something that you've already done every day. And go somewhere where you're safe and let yourself dream every single day for about 5 minutes. Like, think outside the box, man. What would, God, if I didn't have to do this, what would I do? Let yourself dream. And those 15 things are the process that I call extraordinary life. And nobody does them. And when you do, things really work out well. But we negotiate ourselves away from that. Well, what the fuck are you doing? I have so much work to do. So get a divorce. Because you just told your wife she's not worth it. Or your kids. You spent 8 days away from your kids. It doesn't matter if you're traveling. You can still communicate with people. Like, the porn industry already saw virtual, you know, intimacy. You know what I mean? I say that not tongue in cheek, because there's only excuses that you can have, or you can just do what's important. And I really got the value of all that from the teams, because the teams don't have excuses.
Yeah.
Hey guys, we agreed to do this. We're outnumbered. Okay. You still have to shoot, move, and communicate. You know what I mean? we're all going to die. My buddy got his leg blown off. He'll figure that out. He knows how to put a tourniquet on it, and he's going to stay in the game. And that non-excuse life where you're not negotiating with all the stupid things that are there and getting back to priority, it's extraordinary. So I've tried to replace the experience in the teams on the outside with those 15 points.
I like it. I like it. That was indeed the full Monty. Thanks, Tom. I'm definitely, my next step tomorrow is going to be the five senses thing. I like that. Let's shift a little bit to leadership. You know, ton of leadership experience from the teams, and you know, I don't say this lightly, and just because you're on the show, but you know, again, you always seem very thoughtful about how you approached every aspect of the teams, and clearly life as well. So, you know, I'm curious about your approach to certain things. Maybe we could start off with who taught you the most about what it means to be a leader. What happened? You know, how did they impact you?
My first platoon chief, a guy named Roy Maddox from SEAL Team 2, he'd even been UDT. The guy was so old. I'm like, dude, this guy, man. And he was hard as woodpecker lips, man. Oh, my God. He was 42 when he picked up the platoon. And he was hard. And he had said something repeatedly about leadership is that everybody else matters more than you, but you have to be at the top of your game. And that's entirely up to you. You have to not really lead from the front, but you have to be at the top of your game. Not better than everybody else, not that top. And, but that was impactful from me being a young kid, looking at somebody who thought the world of me. Like I'm like, man, I'm just a junior SEAL. And everything in my life mattered to him. Doesn't mean he was approachable with it, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was urgent, hey, I, you know, my wife needs help. Good. You got to come in on Saturday and do what we're doing today then. You got to take your time out. Wow. You mean I'll get to, yeah, but you still need to do it. If you need to go do something that's a priority and it'll make you a better operator, go do that and come back and help when you can. And that really struck a nerve, a good nerve for me. And then when I went to Buds as an instructor, which oddly was September 9th, 2001, which is weird. And it was a weird environment because everybody you were training was going to go into combat, guaranteed. And, Rick Smethers was the skipper at the time, and Zinke was the XO. And I had a lot of relational stuff and operator stuff with Zinke because he was at Unit 2 when I was operating out of there. And he said, here's the deal with being a – and he got me orders to Buds. I was going to get out. I'd done 3 platoons, and I'm like, fuck, I'm done, bro. He goes, why don't you come to Buds as an instructor? I'm like, well, dude, I have these shitty orders to SBU. I'm like, I don't want to go there. And he goes, I'll have orders in hand tomorrow morning. So long story longer, the way he lived was never ask somebody to do something you're not willing to do yourself. He goes, if you're going to go to Buds as an instructor, lead a PT and stay in shape. And if you're going to ask somebody to do something, get down in the water with them. And I took it a little too far, which every hell week I did from breakout till Wednesday without going home. And I was also training for adventure races, so it kind of helped that. And then over years of don't ask somebody to do something that you're not willing to do yourself became a mantra. And I think it served at least me well to lead that way and to be present that way. And I'm glad that other people were better at the stuff that I was, but I was willing to go do it. Even if you were better, cool, you can run faster. I'm still going to go with you. And even if I'm faster, I'm not going to berate you because of my ability. I'm going to slow down and help you, but we're going to go do it together. Like the ruck run, I did all of them. Pete and I did most of them together, but I wasn't willing to ask a student to do something that I either couldn't do or wouldn't do with them. And now it's transcendent into the leadership community on the outside is, hey, leader, you can't do it. Why aren't you down there with them? Well, I don't want to exchange my time for money. Then neither are they. So go do it with them. What's embarrassing? I can't do it anymore. It's only embarrassing that you're not doing it. Everybody knows things get screwed up. And that's the kind of the type of training I provide is you got to get back into the leadership role. Even if you're the CEO of a company, don't lead from 30,000 feet. Lead from the dirt. And that means something to a lot of leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. I try and do that, today. But also miss those times on the teams where, yep. You know, your rank doesn't matter at all. we're all doing the same shitty evolution together.
Yeah.
We're all wet and tired together. You know, sometimes sniping at each other in the boat, you know,
because
someone's steering wrong or whatever. But, you know, in the end, you're all in it together. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, a guy named Brian Scolan, who is my lieutenant in Afghanistan, has done extraordinarily well at Team Six now. And I'm going to go on every op. I don't want to be engaged in the gun though, but I'm going to be out there. I'm like, please don't turn your gun on. Really. I want you to be the only guy here that hasn't had a kill. I want you to manage our shit. Keep us from doing stupid stuff, but don't be self-centered in the fact that you think you're going to be embarrassed that you don't have 11 kills. You know what I mean? The guys don't care. Put them into harm's way and go with them. And then help us get in and out and cover our backs when we screw up. And the only way you're going to know is by being out there. And that, I think that did well for him, but it was a lot of scary shit. He goes, man, I could have watched this from drone feed. I'm like, yeah, I wish I would have actually been on drone feed instead of being there on that one.
Yeah. But having been on the receiving end of seeing a drone feed when stuff's going down and guys are lost and you're not there to do anything about it is not the better of those options. I can assure anyone.
Yeah, it's catastrophic when you watch people that you can't help. It's catastrophic.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just a couple minutes here before we wrap up, Tom. You deal with a lot of CEOs. Some of them are big companies and have been around the block a long time, and probably the process is unworking them out of their corner suite patterns, like you said. But you probably deal with a lot of relatively new and inexperienced leaders. Startup CEOs who, you know, their thing is growing into becoming a unicorn, but they don't know the first thing about leadership, or maybe worse, they think they know about leadership, but they actually don't. What are some of the basics? It's kind of a recurring theme here on the show that we talk about. I've heard every answer possible. They're all good. I'm curious, with your experience and your philosophy about life and leadership, what are some of the things that people regularly do wrong? What are the common mistakes? And, you know, what are the little pieces of advice you'd give someone who, is feeling insecure about their ability to, influence and direct others?
Give up being right. Give up your ego. You don't have to be right. The more wrong you are as a leader, the more impactful the team will be, because they'll help solve problems. But if you're right, you don't need anybody. Like, if you're the leader who's always right all the time, you don't need anybody below you. And the people below you, not because they're lesser, the people operating your business, if you're right all the time, are not very good at their job. Give up your ego. Like, drop your ego at the door. Don't have emotional responses to things that are fucked up. I like Jocko's term called good. 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 We know you got that. We went too far. We spent too much money. It didn't work. Good. Good. You're getting a divorce. Good. So if you don't have ego, solutions are readily available. And the bigger the ego, the boss, the more money you'll make. You can make a lot of money with a big ego. But when you take your hand out of the bucket and you're gone, the team can't function. So I think your job is, as a leader, is to make people's life functional. And like, attrition in a business is because the ego of the boss is too big. Like, if I can't work for you and have a life, I'll just suck a lot of money out of my time working for you. And then I'm going to go to find another place where I can live for a short period of time or a long period of time. And bosses that have less ego have a better business model to exist in. It's not necessarily where all the money comes from. Like, if you want to make a lot of money, be right. and then you'll probably lose it because you get a divorce. That's half your money is gone. You know what I mean? And I see that often is guys or girls with massive egos where they have to be right all the time are going to get a divorce, which is catastrophic. And because I can't exist with you if you're right all the time. Like, why am I here? You already know what to do. And you're going to berate me for every error that I make. Dude, I'm going to screw up things. In the teams, everything was designed around screw-ups. Let's go, how far can we actually push this until it unravels? Okay, that was a little too far. We're sorry, a bunch of you guys got your fingers broken. And, you know, this guy got his eye, you know, he got a bullet in his face. Okay, cool. It's bad to look at it that way. We went way too far. We pushed the boundaries. We'll ratchet it back. Now we know what our limits are. And that type of leadership is wonderful to operate in. It's difficult because, God, we got to push it today. It's a lot easier just to, can't I just pull in at 1,000 yards and shoot the dude? You mean I got to walk into, got to fight my way into 200 yards? But that level of no ego, solve problems, empower, I hate the word empowerment, but empower people to make mistakes and then recover. It's easier to lead at that level because you anticipate errors. You embrace them. I take responsibility that I screwed that up. Hey guys, forgive me. I'll go do push-ups on the side. I get it. Whatever. I'll take the hit. You get a double bonus because I screwed it up. Whatever it takes to lead from the position that I'm not the most important person on the block. It's a better lifestyle for sure.
Yeah. I love it. With that, Tom, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. Where can people find you? And any final words of wisdom for the audience here?
Unbreakableleadership.com is our parent website. And I think we're all over social media. Spell the last name S-H-E-A and it'll find all our silly stuff. The greatest advice to leave anybody with is that tomorrow is a new day. It's always a new day tomorrow. Or in the teams, yesterday, the easiest day was yesterday. Tomorrow, it's a new opportunity tomorrow, y'all.
Might not be the easiest, but it's new.
No, it's not going to be easy, but it's something new every day.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Rainiac Productions. If you like The Warrior Poet, there's more great content on Instagram. Follow Shri, The Warrior Poet, on Instagram. That's S-R-I, The Warrior Poet. You can also get to know me on a personal level by following Shri, actually, on Instagram as well. The Warrior Poet is produced by Laddie, with special contributions by Spoonman and me, Shri.
No, 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 no. Kevin, mina dua. Spita.